Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
This is Sound and Vision from KEXP. I'm Emily Fox. Seattle's Brittany Davis has released her debut album. It's called Image Issues.
Image issues are part of my yesterday that impacts my today.
Davis calls the album an audio movie. Davis is blind, so audio is a heightened sense for her. She even has synesthesia, in which she hears music from smells. And this album is a sonic journey. It bounces through genres from 80s pop.
Something's wrong with you. Something's wrong with you.
Electronic arcade pop. Disco. Rap.
Picture me on TV like I'm high def. I might be blind, but I grind like no meat left.
To taking sonic inspiration from Daft Punk. To James Brown.
Put a spike in my blood pressure.
And through it all are spoken word vignettes that get into memories and the inner monologue of Brittany Davis.
You know, you really are stupid, and nobody's ever gonna like you. I don't know why you thought you would get any love. It was always different.
Yeah, but that difference never stopped me. It never gave me any pause, because I always knew my purpose from the time I was little, remember?
I caught up with Davis after a rehearsal with her other band, Painted Shield, which features Pearl Jam guitarist Stone Gossard. Gossard has been a champion of Davis and her music, and released this album on his label, Loose Groove Records. I talked with Davis at the warehouse where Painted Shield and Pearl Jam rehearse in South Seattle.
This background sounds great, right? That's awesome.
So my name is Brittany Davis. I am a translator of Sonic Divinity. I've been working on music my whole life. I'm from Kansas City, and I've been here in Seattle for about 13, 14 years.
I forget sometimes that you're from Kansas City. Tell me more about growing up in Kansas City. How would you describe life for you there in Kansas City before moving to Seattle?
It was a little stuffy. Well, speaking about music particularly, I didn't have a community. And because music was kind of my first language, it's like being in a foreign country. Everything kind of felt foreign. It was my home, but it wasn't at the same time, because there was so much adversity there, plus no musical community to speak of.
Yeah, I came from them Kansas City streets. I was born and raised on that Kansas City beat.
So you have a song on this album called Show Nuff. Tell me more about the stories that you're telling in this track, because I feel like I can hear a little bit of Kansas City in there.
Kansas City's all over that track, and it represents the innocence. You know, I was a little innocent child. And yes, my mom had went to prison, but I thought all kids had a parent that went to prison. I didn't understand that that wasn't normal yet. That's why there's the kids playing in the beginning. Because it talks about the arrested development that the kids don't know that they're going to face. They don't realize that they've come from broken homes, because that's all they know. And all the kids around them are the same. Some of them are different. But in some shape or form, they've all come from a type of brokenness that isn't seen always. It can be seen. In my case, blessedly, it wasn't. You know, that's why in the track I talk about having good food and good clothes, you know, all of these different things. But there's a brokenness that is felt, a brokenness that is witnessed in the psyche, in the developing psyche of the younger me.
there was a line that stood out to me on this track, and it was, I had to make a choice, either choose silence or choose to raise my voice, be a free woman or stay a slave, of course.
I had to make a choice, either choose silence or choose to raise my voice, be a free woman or stay a slave, of course. It wasn't easy, believe me, rejection is the norm, people may never receive me.
Can you break down those lines to me and kind of the inspiration behind those lyrics?
Oh, so, you know, I had to make a choice because I had to come to a place where I realized that I really had issues. I had to come to a place where I realized that those problems that I had were going to overtake me if I didn't take them over. And just choosing to raise my voice, man, one of the things that you don't want to be where I'm from is a mark. And a mark is a person, basically what we call a sitting duck, a person that, you know, you can't. That's why, see, it all relates to other parts of different tracks, like in Carrie's Face, where I say, I'm a big black broke blind bitch.
I'm a big black broke blind bitch.
These are the things in short form that in long form has hindered people in society, especially my community. Culturally, it's not good to be any of these things because then you get to be the butt end of people's jokes. And so when I said, or stay a slave, of course, it wasn't easy, believe me. Rejection is the norm. People may never receive me. This is also what I'm talking about, is being an overweight, black, blind female from the wrong side of the tracks. You know what I'm saying? That has no physical capital, no cultural capital. But I do have a message. And I had to make a choice to raise my voice despite all of the things that I didn't have. I had to use the one thing I did have.
Yeah, I came from them Kansas City streets. I was born and raised on that Kansas City beat. I was blessed, I stayed dressed, I had food to eat. I was walking on water on my Kansas City feet. But the current was strong, mama went down for 10 years. My brothers and I cried 1,010 tears. We had fears, we should have never had his kids. So we chose to act the pain out in the shit that we did. I had to make a choice, either choose silence or choose to raise my voice, be a free woman or stay a slave, of course. It wasn't easy, believe me, rejection is the norm, people may never receive me.
Yeah. You ended up in Seattle. Talk about that journey to Seattle. How did you end up in Seattle, and how did Seattle impact your musical community?
So Seattle gave me two things. It gave me hope, and it gave me hard work. The two things that we were told to run from where I'm from. My mom, who was incarcerated for 10 years, she had just been released from prison. Maybe I was, 13? So let's say about 2006, 7. And she decided, we need to get away from Kansas City now. And so when I came here to Seattle, we didn't have anything. We didn't have a house. We were living with friends. Then those friends kicked us out. We were on the streets. You know, we were living with family. Those family members fell out with us. We were back on the streets. We were living out of hotels, living out of trash bags, living in, I probably moved at least a good 50 times during my high school career. Living out of trash bags, eating TV dinners, playing keyboards with broken keys, still going around, you know, playing in churches, local talent shows, trying to get on The Voice, The X Factor, the America's Got Talents, all of that. I was auditioning, I was playing, I was praying, I was struggling for the first 8 years I was here, getting taken advantage of, running away from home, trying to figure out, like, why people are so weird, why I don't fit in, why I'm not where I'm supposed to be, you know. I start realizing that there was a gap between me and my peers because there was an autonomy level that they had that I didn't have. I didn't have my independent skills. I couldn't take myself to the store. I couldn't do all of these things. And when I got to Seattle, that changed because the music was like everywhere. I was going to clubs. I was going to shows. Like I said, I was going to festivals. I was going to the churches and church events. And people was like, you're so gifted. God has anointed you. And I truly believed that. But Seattle was my house. It raised me. It taught me if you don't work hard, you can't live better. And that's what Seattle did for me. That's what the music community did for me. It showed me you can have family. You can have disagreements. You can come out on the other side and be just fine. And you can also do whatever it is that you dream you can do, as long as you're willing to believe in the hard work that it takes to get there.
So I want to ask about some tracks on the record. Before I do, I understand that you have synesthesia, and this fascinates me. Right. Obviously, if you have synesthesia, you don't really know what it is because it's just a part of you. You don't realize what's different and what people don't experience and what people do experience. So, but from what you understand, what is synesthesia like for you, and how does that play out from your understanding?
What it is for me is that textures and smells create sounds.
Wow.
If I smell something really strong, I get all of the notes like a melody. If it's a weak smell, maybe I get a note or two, but the song is not complete. Or the emotion is not complete. Or the depth of the experience or the synesthetic experience is not as deep. So, like, let's say that I smell a cherry, right? So you smell cherries. And let's say cherries, the smell, makes two notes. Doo-doo, right? So you hear those two notes whenever you smell it. But depending on how pronounced the smell is, the cherry, if it's just like, you know what I mean? Or boom, boom. You're like, golly, man, they just went crazy with the, you know what I mean?
So is smell like a songwriting tool for you at all?
Yes. Oh, sometimes it can be. Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why I love when, I've never understood this until I realized I had synesthesia, but the one thing that I love the most is like when I'm writing a song and somebody's cooking or like making a beat and somebody's cooking, I'm like, oh, hey, oh, you know, I just get into the groove of the smells. Like I start adding in pads that smell like the chicken grease or cymbals that sizzle like the bacon. You know what I'm saying? It's just crazy.
So what would be the best, if someone was cooking, what would be the best meal to fuel your musical creativity?
Oh, that's a good question. But, well, something with a lot of different flavors or different seasonings. So like something with veggies in it. Yeah. Something like a good stew. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because you got that broth that boils and bubbles like vinyl. Like warmth, you got those different vegetables, and then you have to put different seasonings in there. So then there's like colors that come along with the seasonings, because like you get to messing around with some pepper, and it's all black and purple and green, and got some deep reds in there for the spiciness, and you get some diminished chords out of that. Some real cool diminished chords. And some real, like, lavender purple chords, like seven chords, you know, like ebonies and browns, like fourths and perfect fifths and all of that stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? All of these different theories and terms, and I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, you feel them and you make these beats out of them. That's why my beats are mostly loops, because like the same way that you smell something, it's the same way I hear it. Like I hear it, for four bars, and then it repeats itself.
Wow.
The same. It's crazy.
I just want to get in your head.
It can be scary, though.
So throughout this album, you have these spoken word vignettes called Treadmill Memories, and there's some really interesting audio happening in them, but they're also kind of this inner monologue with memories that are happening.
It's always too fast, and I'm always too slow. It's always too fast, and I'm always too shame. Alone, that's home.
Tell me more about Treadmill Memories and why you wanted them to be a part of this record.
See, Treadmill Memories are like the glue, I always say. They hold the whole record together. Because without them, you don't understand the journey we're going on. Like I say, in the past, and hopefully, the Lord willing, in the future, this album is an audio movie. So these treadmills, memories, are scenes. And again, like I said, music is my first language. And so the deeper meaning of the treadmill memories is the cadence of the footsteps on the treadmills.
They don't believe in me. None of them do. They say they believe in me, but all I do is hurt them. So I don't try to, but I do.
When you hear those footsteps, relentless and jarring, and just you can't stop, because if you do, you're gonna fall. You know, this treadmill goes and goes and goes, and it's relentless. It has a rhythm, has a cadence, and it has a requirement that you continue on a journey even if you don't want to. And it takes you somewhere that maybe you'll like where you get, because when you use a treadmill, it strengthens your heart, it strengthens you, it helps you grow in some way. But whether or not you want to stop or not, that's not up to you, that's up to the treadmill. Well, this treadmill is going and going, and it's requiring you to go where it goes. It's taking you around the world of your inner soul. It's going through the pathways that you've blocked off. It's going through the house of cards that you built for yourself and knocking it down. It's making you face yourself.
I have to be quiet and do what they say. I had to be very quiet.
Playing in that damn water. Get out of there.
Lift up your arms for me.
If I say something, they're gonna be mad at me. And I'm gonna have to explain myself, and it's gonna make me cry.
Which songs on this album tell the most meaningful stories or share a meaningful message, you know, for you, when you think back at some of these tracks and the messages that you're sharing or the stories that you're sharing? Is there something, a track on here that's especially meaningful from that standpoint?
I would have to say, like, Daddy's Girl, Wanted You to Know, and Trading Secrets. And all three of those are tracks dedicated to somebody. Daddy's Girl's dedicated to my father, who was murdered when I was 12 by gunfire. And that was actually just before my mom was released from prison the next year.
Lost my earthly father, he was all that I had. R.I.P. So when it came to love, I gave it a hard pass. I
wasn't. Then Wanted You to Know was dedicated to my younger brother. I have three brothers. Well, now I have two, because one just got killed last April in Kansas City, crazy place. And they were trying to get him. I mean, he had just gotten out of prison. He had just done a 10-year sentence. And they were trying to get him. And they got him. And it broke my heart, but it also took a part of me.
R.I.P. to my black king, you deserve a crown. Little brother, you live on in my heart, not in the ground.
Then also, Trading Secrets was dedicated to my uncle, who sexually abused me when I was 4.5 years old. And it represents the coldness of what it means to disappear from your body when you realize that it really doesn't belong to you as a child. Someone can overpower it and take it away.
The smoking gun.
So those three tracks are really important to me on this album because my dad's song was not really about my dad per se, but it was dedicated to him because as I was making it, I was thinking about how I was mourning his love, really, because in that song I say, thank God that I'm still alive. Long day, so I pray a little rest for me. Every effing body swears they know what's best for me. Life is a party, so they gotta dress for me. I can't fit it. If I'm too big, I'm ugly. It's better for me to be small. Then you F with me.
Thank God that I'm still alive. Long day, so I pray a little rest for me. Everybody swear they know what's best for me. Life is a party, so they gotta dress for me. I can't fit it. If I'm too big, I'm ugly. It's better for me to be small than you F with me.
I think about the way that he used to love me and hold me tight. And he didn't even need a reason. It wasn't because I did good in school. It wasn't because I was a pretty little this or a great sports that or even a musician or anything. He would just pick me up and hold me. And it was unconditional. And the world won't do that. Now, I don't expect them to all, but I appreciate the love always. Don't get me twisted, but I know no love will be like the love I lost when I lost him. And that song dedicated to him kind of represents all of those thoughts and all of that mental refuse from the hole where his love used to be in my life. And then the one song about my brother, Wanted You to Know, it represents just brotherliness. Like, he was just a brother. He was a butthead. He was a best friend. He protected me. He would beat anybody up for me, but he'd steal my money just as much as he'd steal anybody else's. And I loved him. I didn't care. I loved him regardless. But I'm still mad at him that he didn't come and see me before he died. And I'm like, you little jerk way, you stinker, you know what I'm saying? You know? And I'm just like, dude, I just want you to know I love you. And that's what that song is about. Yeah, just, you know, those three songs really, I want people to understand that I'm complex as a person. I'm not just a blind girl who has an inspirational story to tell. I'm a person who wants to be loved, who wants to be remembered, who wants to be understood just like everybody else. It's like everybody else.
To everybody else on the surface, seem like I'm cool. But deep inside my heart is bleeding, I don't know what to do. I lost so many to violence, this world so cold and cruel. I didn't want to believe that one day it would be you. You had so much potential, but they locked it all in a cage. I'm so sorry you lost your life at such a young age. But I know you're peaceful now, because here you dealt with so much rage. In the end, I'll always defend your honor in every stage.
That was my conversation with Brittany Davis. Her debut album, Image Issues, was released on March 1st. Here's her song, Sepricon.
Controller, coming at you with the real. Open your
business. They ain't coming, I'ma steady this. Get it like a good day. Get it in the worst way. Passionate and powerful. Coming at you, baby, got the power. Ooh. And I'm high on that indica. You don't wanna get into her. About to hit the space bar on these hoes. They ain't ready, I'm about to make a bitch. Chop, 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 pick a job.
That was Sound and Vision. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and consider giving a one-time $20 donation to help support this show at kexp.org/sound. Thanks for listening.